You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back, everybody, to our third and final hour. You just heard an expert exposition given by Mark Weber on the Russia-Ukraine-Washington-NATO topic, following on the heels of Paul Craig Roberts, who was on with us just last week. Now we welcome back to the program for the third time, Padraig Martin. He is a columnist for Identity Dixie and author of a relatively brand new book, came out in December, A Walk in the Park, My Charlottesville Story. Padraig, how are you tonight? It's great to have you back.
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you very much for the invitation to come back. I love the show.
Well, there is good reason to have you. You're a fantastic guest. That's first and foremost. But we're actually having you on tonight to tease a brand new project that I think listeners of this particular radio program will be very excited to hear about and learn more about. But before we do, just want to remind everybody that you made your first appearance on the show back right before Thanksgiving of last year. And at that time, Donald Trump had just announced he was running for president. You're in Florida, close to DeSantis. Physically speaking, not necessarily, he didn't come over for barbecues and things like that, but you live in Florida. So you were there to share some thoughts on the Trump versus DeSantis question. That was back last November. Then in December, just about 3 weeks later, you were on to talk about that aforementioned book, A Walk in the Park, My Charlottesville Story. We did an hour on that. Charlottesville, a recurring topic on this program and for a lot of reasons. Anything new on the front of that particular book now that it's in about its third month of publication?
Yeah, the book's done great. It really exceeded our sales expectations, which was fantastic. I was at a League of the South conference where I had a few folks that kind of surprised me asking me for autographs, which is nice. the book itself has sold very well. Very briefly, it topped out as number one in the nationalism category, beating Ben Shapiro's recent book and a few other folks as well that are part of that category of considered genre. Yeah, I was really surprised actually by that. So it's done well. It's done really well, and it continues to sell. And I continue to get questions regarding the content of the book from different folks, and it's great. It really is. It's flattering and it's humbling.
Well, that's fantastic. So of course, people, if you want to get the book, if you're interested in Charlottesville, which I know you are, you can go to Amazon.com, A Walk in the Park, My Charlottesville Story. And as Padraig just mentioned, in its particular subcategory, it was outpacing for a time Ben Shapiro title. So it did make a little bit of news and made an impact, and people are reading it. We want you to read it. So I wanted to start there. That is still fresh enough and always timely when you're talking about the ramifications of Charlottesville. That book just came out in early December. So here we are now, the first month of February. So about 2 months.
Thank you.
No, you're very welcome. We want people to get it. But you are not resting on the laurels of that success. No, not at all. Not even for a minute. You have already dived in headfirst into another project, which I mean, that's very interesting. I think this one, at least equally so. What are you working on now, Padraig? And you didn't just begin working on it last week. This is something I've known about since the very beginning of the year, right into the very next thing. What is it?
Yep, it's a new book that's coming out. We've got 12 authors from the South, throughout the South, including yourself. Of course, you're going to be a contributing author as well. We're writing on really defining the Southern nationalist movement and where this is coming from, along with Dr. Hill, Neil Kumar. We have various folks from Identity Dixie. We have Dissident Mama, who runs a very popular podcast as well. Ann Wilson Smith. Ann Wilson Smith is Claude Wilson's daughter, and she also wrote a great book on Charlottesville as well, Charlottesville Untold. So she was published there, where she had also interviewed folks who participated in Charlottesville. So a number of authors that are coming in that are contributing to a book that will really define this movement. And where this comes from is, for years now, the left has defined Southern nationalism, what they'll call neo-confederacy or neo-confederate ideas, And it's really not that. The South has a right to have its own identity. It has a right to establish that identity. And so this will be 12 authors who take a prominent role in Southern nationalist circles, who will begin to, who will actually write what it means to be a Southern nationalist in various ways, how it really impacts us as a people, and why we need to be free and have a free and independent Dixie. Really, really excited about it. So far, some of the contributions coming in have been really exciting, and I'm looking forward to getting this published and getting this out. And you know, obviously, you and I have been working together a little bit on this as well, this project. Just we want to take back the message in 2023 and hammer it home.
I am very excited about this. This is the first thing I've written in terms of a book, and I'll be contributing one chapter to this book. It's, as Patrick mentioned, the first thing I've written in a book form since my first and only title back in 2010. But this is going to have, what, about a dozen? Is it right at 12 contributing authors all writing one chapter apiece? And the topics are vast and varied with regard to Southern nationalism and Southern identity. Can you tell us a little bit more about some of those other contributors and some of the topics that you know they'll be writing about?
Sure. So, well, again, with some of the folks from Identity Dixie who have written for Identity Dixie in the past, such as Binks Bowling, he's writing about the Antifa's failures, how it has the individuals that have sort of become these creeps, these sort of online creeps who have tried to tear down not just Southern identity, but also the South's will to fight for its own independence. And he really targets them with regard to his submission. Another gentleman who's also written in the past for Identity Dixie is, his name is Father Dabney. He goes by the term Father Dabney. I know with his particular submission, he is going into just in terms of, you know, overall Southern history. He's talking about the mythology that really works in and around the South. When you have the South as a culture, as a unique ethnic group, having these myths, having these stories is really important to building that cultural dynamic up. And the history of those various kinds of myths that really create a unique identity. I know Dr. Hill is writing really an argument for why the South should be free. For myself personally, I'm contributing a component as to what have been successful nationalist movements. So the successful nationalist movements, especially looking at the Irish at the turn of the 19th and 20th century, looking at how the Iranians were able to walk back a lot of the more culturally degenerate movements that were beginning in the 1960s, 1970s, how the Iranian Revolution really kind of worked that, or I guess sort of fought back against this kind of stuff, and other types of nationalist movements that have succeeded in the past. But really, I mean, I think one of the more exciting pieces, definitely Dr. Hill's piece, Michael Hill, a leader, president of the League of the South, where he breaks into the reasons why, not only why the South should be free, but also where there's a difference in terms of the view of how the South should be governed. You know, there's sort of liberal democracy ideas versus a nationalist concept of self-determination. And he's already submitted his piece, his component. It's a fantastic component. Of course, Dr. Hill is an educated man, former professor as well, obviously doctor. So the PhD. So, I mean, he really gets into the highlights of why liberal democracy is so destructive and why we really need to be looking at a new template for governance in the South.
Stay tuned right there. We've got Patrick for one more segment. Now, we've whetted your appetite, teasing this new project a little bit. You've got some information now for you to chew on during the break. When we come back, we'll tell you when you can expect this thing to be released and how it's going to be released. Pretty exciting stuff. Stay tuned.
This is a battle between truth and deceit. A battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpicTimes.com.
Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all natural, raw honey. Well, now you can, thanks to LocalHoneyMan.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at LocalHoneyMan.com.
Antelope Hill Publishing is America's leading publisher of dissident books, bringing you a wide variety of new translations and original works on every subject from the Spanish Civil War to the funding behind the transgender movement. Antelope Hill publishes books that mainstream publishers won't touch, full of information that challenges the political status quo and brings real culture to the reading public at an affordable price. If you count yourself as a political dissident, you owe it to yourself to check out the Antelope Hill catalog with exclusive offerings like Solzhenitsyn and the Right, the Open Society Playbook, Opioids for the Masses, and many more. There's something there for everyone, and new titles are added every month. Check out the catalog today at antelopehillpublishing.com. That's antelopehillpublishing.com. I'm James Edwards, and I want you to go to antelopehillpublishing.com. Welcome back, everybody, with Patrick Martin of Identity Dixie. Patrick is a devout Christian, a dedicated Southern nationalist, author, and podcaster for Identity Dixie, a confederation of Southern nationalist content producers. He holds, listen, a lot more to Patrick than that, though. He holds a master's in Islamic law and studies, an MBA in international finance. He has traveled to no less than 78 countries on behalf of the global American empire before it turned on him. Today, he and his wife own four companies. He's an entrepreneur on two different continents that employed doxed dissidents in several states and countries. They reside in the great state of Florida. So a lot more to Patrick than just writing books, although he did write a great one that had some good success when it was released back in December, Walk in the Park, My Charlottesville Story. Fascinating guy, fascinating background, as you just heard. That's just a snapshot. But already, not even taking a moment to take a victory lap, headlong into a collaborative project with no less than 12 contributing authors. He's been talking about it. I'll be writing a chapter entitled There's No Place Like Home. A lot of times with books, you either like it, you don't like it. But really with this one, there's going to be something for everybody. So long as you're interested at all in Southern-related issues or the future of a free and independent Dixie, there's going to be something for you amongst the dozen or so varied topics by the different personalities that are going to be contributing. I'm excited about it. I want you to be excited about it, and you won't have to wait too long to have it in your hands. Patrick, what's the production schedule? Right now, people are still writing and submitting it. Then it's going to go into editing, and then it's going to go into physical production. When could people potentially have this in their hands?
Yep. So the we expect to have all the submissions in, hopefully within the next week or so, week and a half. And then we've already begun editing, myself and Rick Dirtwater. I've already begun editing the content. We're going to assemble and put it together, and we think that by the probably the middle to the end of March, we'll have a soft launch of the book, which is usually what you do is you put out a couple of publications, you test it as an author, make sure everything is good to go. And then we're really hoping, we want to make this happen, is having a real launch party on April 1st at Dixie Republic in Travelers Rest, South Carolina, where the authors can get together, those who can make it there. We can get together with folks who are interested in the book, interested in topics, and really launch this the right way. Get this out there to as many folks as possible, because very, very excited about the content, very excited about this book, and really excited about taking back the narrative.
Ladies and gentlemen, we talk so much about how much fun we have on this program truly throughout the year, but a lot of times, you know, that time in between Halloween and Christmas is just festive on our annual broadcasting calendar for a lot of different reasons. But this is a time of year now that I am almost every bit as much excited about, because we're entering into this sort of 3-month period here coming up, where next week we're going to have the annual TPC Ladies Night, where we have a collection of all female contributors for the Valentine's Day show, talking about raising healthy families and God-ordained gender roles and all of that stuff. We do that once a year, the Ladies Night show. That's next week. And then we'll be getting into, in pretty short order, our March Around the World series, which is always so much fun. During the month of March, as you know, we interview exclusively leaders and elected officials from outside of the United States. Everybody's a foreign guest in the month of March. And then we get into Confederate History and Heritage Month in April. We have done that every year for as many years as we've been on. April has always been Confederate History Month here on TBC, except this time we'll be able to kick off Confederate History Month that very first week of April live at Dixie Republic, where we'll be having the launch party for this book. Now, you know Dixie Republic. We've done some broadcasts there several times. The Greenville, South Carolina area is very, very nice. And if you want to maybe take a trip and attend this, we'll have information as it gets a little more closer to time. But put that bee in your bonnet. First weekend, first Saturday in April, there in the Greenville, South Carolina upcountry area. That will be an event to be seen. As many of the authors that are contributing to this book as can be will be there. I'll be there. We'll be broadcasting live. There'll be a book signing and a lot of fun. It will be open to the public, and you can really satisfy all of your Southern needs at Dixie Republic, as you well know. I am really, really looking forward to that, and I want to thank the ownership there at Dixie Republic for making their facilities open for this event to us and to everyone. What a way to kick off Confederate History Month, Patrick.
Yeah, no kidding. It's really, I mean, this is, well, first of all, Dixie Republic is great. For those who have not been there before, it's really worth the trip. And the couple that owns the establishment are outstanding people. I mean, they're really just very warm and welcoming. But, you know, to be able to kick off the month with having a book launch, with having, again, the whole year, 2023, is going to be based on retaking the narrative. This is, we're reclaiming this narrative, taking back what we own, which is a heritage and a country, or a series of countries, I should say, that have a right to their own independence, have a right to be free. And secession is really the only way moving forward. It's just my personal opinion, the opinion of, I believe, every one of the authors that are contributing this book, is that the right way is our own way. And to be able to kick off a Heritage Month that is so important, I think really critical now more than just about any other time, because it's been under such attack over the last couple of decades, but especially the last 5 years. To take it back, take back the narrative, and kick it off the right way on April 1st in Traveler's Rest at Dixie Republic. That's just going to be exciting, to be able to just show off who we are, what we're all about, and move forward. And it's really, it's just to have that April kicked off the right way is just, again, it's really exciting. Very, very, very happy about it.
Yes, absolutely. And it's not just the first Saturday in April, although it is. It is the very first day of April. There'll be no fools on April Fool's Day at Dixie Republic, that's for sure. And this book will be there, and we'll have hard copy editions of it for people to get. And it's just it's really a tourist attraction, that place is. Every time I go there, every time we broadcast from there, it's we've been doing it about 2 years, a little over 2 years now. We've gone up there for about a half a dozen shows nearly. And it's just a thrill every time we get to visit the people up there and the crowds that come when they do public events. And it's just wonderful. So we'll be able to kick off Confederate History and Heritage Month this year with that book signing, live remote broadcast. And then as we continue to interview a variety of Southern-themed guests throughout the month of April, as we always do, we'll be able to plug the book over and over and over and over and over. And this is something that I think will be a tool for our people as we look to reassert our identity here in our ancestral homeland. So, Patrick, do we have a name for the book yet? I've seen a lot of the titles for the different chapters. Does the book actually have an official name? I know we're teasing this a mite early, but it's not too early. It's February. April's coming.
We've been working around a few names right now. We don't have a name just yet. I don't want to get it. Working with the chief editor, Rick Dirtwater, and I have been going back and forth and playing a little bit of ping pong with some of the ideas. So I don't want to steal his thunder, so I don't want to put a name on there just yet. But with the book itself, because it's somewhat of a modern version of I'll Take My Stand, which had 12 contributors, the Old Agrarian Ways of the South, had 12 contributors back almost 100 years ago. This is a modern version of that. So we're playing with names that are probably similar, but we'll still see. So it'd be a little bit too early, but you know, we'll have a name here probably the next week or two. Right
hey,
now,
you
it's
know
all
what?
About the essays.
That gives me a wonderful reason to have you back on, even in advance of the official release. We'll do another appearance with you a little bit before Confederate History Month. And we will have you on to give a little more information and remind people again where to be that first Saturday in April. Now, I had said we were going to have some time to talk about some other things going on outside of the book. There was a recent event that the League of the South held in Florida that went quite well, and we've got about a minute. Can you tell us what was so good about that particular state chapter meeting?
You know, I think it was really well organized, really well run. It's a volunteer group that got together. You know, that obviously has every year they've got a conference in Florida, and they were able to pull together a number of fantastic speakers who stayed on point, stayed on message from beginning to end. And the real message was that a free Florida, a free South is really the way to go. And they pulled it off in such a way, no riffraff, none of these Antifa goons trying to stop it. It was held in a beautiful state park, and I can't give them enough credit for how well they ran that day.
And if you want to know more, I told Patrick earlier, I read with interest his one of his most recent articles there at identitydixie.com, My Florida. You can't separate a man and his blood and bone from the soil, and that's one of the things that ties us all together here in Dixie. And it's a wonderful article about one of my very favorite states of the old Confederacy, and I would encourage you to check it out. Anything Patrick writes, whether it's his book, which we want you to buy at Amazon.com, Walk in the Park, My Charlottesville Story, or any of the articles he contributes at Identity Dixie, be sure to read them. Patrick, we'll talk to you again soon. We'll see you in April. Stay tuned, everybody. We'll wrap up the show next.
Exposing corruption. Informing citizens. Pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News. I'm Rich Johnson.
The ayes are 218. The nays are 211. The resolution is adopted.
The resolution is to remove Minnesota Democrat Ilhan Omar from the House Foreign Affairs Committee. Republicans say it's punishment for her comments years ago on Israel. Democrats say it's just political revenge. On the House floor before the vote, Omar said,
"Take your vote or not. I am here to stay, and I am here to be a voice against harms around the world and advocate for a better world."
The documents drama continues. The Wall Street Journal reports FBI agents will once again search the home of former Vice President Mike Pence. The Journal says Justice Department lawyers and Pence's lawyers are talking, and the search will happen in the coming days. President Biden's talking cooperation.
"We can come together to do big things for the country. We can join hands and get things done."
At this morning's National Prayer Breakfast, Biden said, "If we try, we can find more that unites us than divides us." Another day of crippling ice in the Mid-South. So far, the storm's led to at least 9 deaths and cut power to tens of thousands. Several hundred flights, especially at airports in Texas, have been canceled or delayed. And there's another strong cold front blasting the upper Midwest, according to Bob Orovic at the National Weather Service.
"The cold snap that's occurring across the northern tier over the next few days is going to be really quick. As we go later in the weekend and into next week, the temperatures are going to be rebounding really quick. And actually, the temperatures are going to be mostly above average across the nation."
Republican attorneys general in 20 states are warning the big drugstore chains, CVS and Walgreens, do not mail abortion pills to customers in their states. Both chains recently applied to the FDA to fill prescriptions for those pills in states where they're legal. This is USA News.
Hi, this is Joe Cordell with the law firm Cordell & Cordell. When the prospect of divorce becomes a reality, you need a partner that you can count on. If you're a man in this situation, consider contacting Cordell & Cordell. We've helped men navigate complex legal matters for 30 years.
Contact Cordell & Cordell to schedule an appointment with one of our firms online at CordellCordell.com. No representation is made that the quality of legal services to be performed is greater than the quality of legal services performed by other lawyers. Online at CordellCordell.com. CordellCordell.com.
If you're a diabetic, we have great news. You can end the painful finger sticks with a new CGM. Plus, they may be covered by Medicare, Medicaid, or private insurance. If you test and inject daily, you may qualify. Call U.S. Med now to learn more.
800-471-7065. 800-471-7065. 800-471-7065. That's 800-471-7065.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you just heard from Patrick Martin about a forthcoming book project that we're very excited about. Now, let me introduce you to a gentleman and a scholar who is making his debut appearance on the program tonight. Spencer Quinn is an essayist and a novelist. You've probably seen his works. He's been writing for Countercurrents since 2016. Some of his writings can also be found in the Occidental Observer, the Occidental Quarterly, but he has a brand new novel, a novel, which is novel for our people because so oftentimes the books that are produced are topical or issue-oriented in nature or perhaps even autobiographical, but you don't get a lot of works of fiction, which I think is very important and a nice change of pace. His third novel, which he's on to talk about tonight, has been published by the White People's Press, and we'll give you some information about that organization in just a moment, but it's called the No College Club, and now here to tell us about it is the author himself, Spencer Quinn. Spencer, welcome to TPC.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, it's entirely our pleasure. So here is the snapshot of what this book is about. And I'm reading now from the back cover, which I hold in my hand here at the studio. While doing research for a school project on black slavery, four white high school students make a shocking discovery about the forgotten history of white servitude in colonial America. They learn it was just as cruel and widespread as black slavery and are now forced to make a choice. Turn in a politically correct project on black slavery or defy their anti-white teacher by focusing on white slavery, thereby risking being attacked as racists and possibly being expelled. Their futures and their very identities as white Americans lay in the balance. What a provocative synopsis for a fiction novel. Quinn, how'd you come up with it? Well, you're welcome.
Most of the stuff I've done prior to this was, you know, grown-up novels and all, and Greg Johnson of Countercurrents suggested that, you know, have you thought about young adult fiction? And at first I said, no, I hadn't, and I hadn't even considered it, and then I thought, well, why not? And so, you know, I just put my head down, and I just thought about it for a while, and I thought, well, what kind of stuff do kids like to read? And, you know, I did a little research and, you know, I investigated, you know, possibilities of time travel, you know, that were, you know, ghosts and that kind of thing where you could, modern day kids could talk to, say, indentured servants of the past, because I've been studying a lot of the indentured servitude, in the colonial period. But after I made a couple stabs at it, I decided, no, I'll keep most of this in the present day and just make it having these kids discover something really incredible that no one had discovered before about white servitude. They actually make a historical discovery quite by accident while they're doing their research. And then they have to make a decision about giving up their future, potentially, or doing the right thing and telling the truth.
So let's just get right into it. And when we come back in the second segment that we have with you tonight, we're going to talk a little bit more about the White People's Press. Folks, if you're not following the kind of content that they're producing, I can't even tell you how superb it is. We'll get into that. But this is a very interesting topic for me, Spencer, because so many people are just obviously influenced by their peers and by what they're told. People have a natural human nature is to, well, at least for a lot of people, I don't know so much about people like us, but is to believe what you're told. And so much of, there's so much destruction going on in the school systems these days. And so that's one of the things that this book is shining a spotlight on, the state of anti-whiteism in education today. How
exactly
is that addressed by this novel?
Well, the teacher is their anti-white teacher is straight out of like the 1619 project, you know, and it's all about, for them, it's about white privilege. It's about being anti-racist and critical theory and all that. And there's a scene in chapter two where the teacher just browbeats the students with this anti-white narrative. And this anti-white narrative, like any insidious narrative, you know, has some truth in it. Yes, blacks were slaves, you know, in the past, but it completely ignores other aspects of the truth, which is not convenient to the political political perspectives or the political ambitions of the 1619 people. And so what happens is that, you know, you have a girl, Caroline, who is a very popular, pretty girl, and she's got some close friends, and she's a good student and looking forward to, you know, a bright future. And she witnesses this boy who's, you know, a scruffy kid, and he's an athlete, and he's very bright. He's frighteningly bright, but he's also an outcast in many ways. And he stands up to the teacher, just straight up. He read the book that the teacher assigned, like no one else did. He read it, interpreted it from our perspective, and demonstrated how whites are not the only ones to blame for black slavery, and blacks were, in fact, maybe even more to blame, since they were more violent to their own kind than whites really were, when you actually combine everything on the net. And so he stands up to her with this sacrilegious perspective, and she just nails him for it and kicks him out of the room. And he's on the brink of being expelled. And at the same time, while Caroline is watching this, she sort of falls in love with him a little bit, you know, because one of the tropes of romance novels and romance stories is for the young girl to fall in love with the bad boy, you know, the boy who's kind of threatening, the boy who's, you know, not doing everything he's supposed to do, who's a bit of a rebel. And that's what you get here. And so she's torn between following her heart and her mind, because she knows the kid's making sense. His name is Derek. She knows he's making sense. She knows he read the book because she read it too. And at the same, and then she has to balance her heart and mind against her ambitions and her popularity and all the comfort she has as a popular girl in high school. And that is a big decision she has to make. Does she follow the boy and go on this project with him, or does she abandon him, you know? And that is a conflict that I'm afraid many of our folks have to deal with, especially young people.
Laura Towler, who is a British voice for our people, wrote of the book, Spencer Quinn exemplifies beautifully the anxiety and fearfulness of going against the grain in an environment where you simply want to fit in. Yet such articulated tribulations are matched in impact only by the many instances of courage and honesty presented throughout this book. The No College Club goes where other novels dare not tread. And that, you know, brings us up to, I think, a wider point of discussion that I found interesting as I was reading through this book. Weighing the importance of higher education versus the threat of it. You know, certainly our ethnostate one day will need doctors and engineers and people who went through higher levels of education. But we're also going to need mechanics and plumbers, too. I mean, and there's very good money in that kind of work. And I love our blue-collar people. So was that something that you took in mind? Is there a message there underneath the surface that you want people to consider about the destruction that the university system is doing to our people is really, I think, one of the most potent arrows in the anti-white quiver?
Exactly. Well, first of all, I think that the promise of college is also a threat. So you and this is a theme that gets, you know, brought up a lot in the book, where the kids are concerned, I can't do this because then I might not make it to college. You know, I mean, Kyle Rittenhouse, they were talking about kicking him out of college. The girl who used the N-word on a selfie and got called out for it because she was, you know, reciting a rap lyric. You know, the college that accepted her rejected her just like that, from what I remember. So, I mean, the threat of not being able to go to college is one thing that keeps white kids in line these days. And I think that's just insidious. I think that's horrible. You know, I mean, you know, this is how civilizations ossify, where you can't think for yourself and speak for yourself because you're afraid you won't have, that's what they did in the Soviet Union. You won't have a career or a future if you don't speak the truth. Now, at the end, we're not saying don't go to college. It's just that there's options other than college if you don't want to have your mind destroyed by this sort of thing. You know, and personally, I think that if you're really talented as a doctor or an engineer, yes, go. But, you know, if it's something else that you're passionate about or that you want to do, college is not necessarily something you have to consider. You can consider other options too.
Well, that's absolutely right. And, of course, what has happened with the modern education system is different than what it was 100 years ago and at other points in our past. I mean, it's just gotten so progressively worse, as I often joke. That's what progress is when the progressives use it. You hear progress mentioned, something's getting progressively worse, whatever they're talking about.
Right.
You go in,
right.
you're a young student, you're saddling yourself with almost unbearable loads of debt. You've got a mortgage without the house, and they are injecting this poison into your mind. It takes a very strong-willed person to be able to withstand that, and a lot of people are incapable of doing it because they weren't raised with a strong foundation. So it's a thorny topic, to be sure. But anyway, back to the book. We're about to come up on a break, so I will tell you where you can get the book. The White People's Press. Check out White People, whitepeoplepress.com, whitepeoplepress.com. It's also on Amazon. We'll get Spencer himself to tell us how you can get it. But while we're in this break, if you're listening at home and not driving around, whitepeoplepress.com. The content and the craftsmanship of their books beats any establishment imprint that I've seen. No joke. We'll be right back.
Why does the left lie constantly? Because they get spiritual power from lying. The lies come from Satan, the father of lies. John 8:44. Here's how the political lying process works. Satan provides the beast with a lie. Then the more they use the lie, the more spiritual power they get. Look, the media is a lie multiplier, and this multiplication gives more evil, spiritual power to the beast. And that can overwhelm and even deceive the body of Christ, especially when the body is being disobedient to the head. The churches today are incorporated, so they're subordinate to human government. They obey the beast and do nothing to restore our national relationship with God. And the government shall be on his shoulders, Isaiah 9:6. That verse is not for the present-day church. Rather, it is for the end-time church, the body of the line of Judah. A message from Christ Kingdom Ministries.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs. While you're waiting, drop by our Confederate Corner for a free cup of coffee and good conversation. Remember, there are no strangers here, just friends who haven't met yet. Dixie Republic, we're not just a roadside attraction, we're a destination for our people. For more information, visit DixieRepublic.com.
All right, welcome back, everybody. One more segment. What a great show tonight with Mark Weber, Patrick Martin, and now Spencer Quinn making his debut appearance on TPC, the first of more to come, I promise you. WhitePeoplePress.com. I said it just before the break. I have their copy table book, which is entitled Folk. It is one of the most beautiful books I have ever seen. The images are so striking, and the contributions by several people who have been on this program are so good. I mean, it's something that you want to have displayed in your home as a decorative piece. I also have the book 50 Classic Tales, some of the great European fairy tales that I read to the kids, or have read to some of my younger kids. I got a daughter who's now two that we'll be getting into that with her as well. Works of fiction, works of nonfiction. It's all there. It's called the White People's Press, but the website is whitepeoplepress.com. And it's top class. Now, before we get back onto the topic of the book at hand with Spencer Quinn, the No College Club, Spencer, let's talk a little bit about the importance of doing things in a first-class way, like this publishing company is doing, and the importance of fiction. That is something I know other countercurrent writers have mentioned. And I believe Jim Goad may have spoken about it as well. Two-part question. I know some of my listeners, I'm talking about you, David. I don't like doing it either. Don't ask two-part questions, but I got to do it because I'm already committed. The importance of high-quality work and the importance of works of fiction to help steal our people.
Well, the thing is that with the No College Club, we could have published this 8 months ago. The text was ready by early 2022, and I thought about it, and I'm like, no, we need to go the extra mile with this. We need to give it something that nothing has been given before. So I decided to have chapter sketches, you know, like how when you read the classics, you know, like Mark Twain or Robert Louis Stevenson or whatever, you know, if you look on paperback, you'll see the chapter sketches, and that's what we did here, and we put a lot of effort into that. Because I wanted people to hold the book and realize that there was a lot of love that went into it, a lot of effort to make this a top quality product that they can be proud to own. And, you know, so we really, really pushed it. And yeah, you're right. I mean, you have to have extremely high quality. And so the, you know, we had it edited. We had the art done. I did the research that needs to be done. And yeah, you have to always put forth your best effort. And when you're in a position like ours, you know, we don't really have too much room to make mistakes, you know, or too much room to be sloppy. You know, we really have to be on point. And so being aware of that, I did the very, very best I could. And the people who worked with us, including Tony Vermont of the White People Press and Donald Kent, the artist, and Rich Hauck, who is our legal consultant, they really put in the extra time to get the best product possible. And as far as the importance of fiction goes, I mean, well, remember, this is young adult fiction. So I want really young kids. I want kids, you know, in seventh grade or higher to be reading it. Of course, adults will love it. It's not excluding adults. It's not infantile. But, you know, it is a wholesome story for young kids. There's nothing inappropriate about it. There's no swearing and that kind of thing. It's very wholesome. But at the same time, it will hopefully engage young people. And when you engage young people, they're going to realize that there are alternatives besides what you can find in Barnes & Noble, right? There's alternative, you know, aside from this woke stuff that gets shoved down our throat. And the idea that fiction makes it fun, makes it enjoyable and inviting. I mean, you know, you could teach kids Julius Evola, but I mean, you know, that might not, I mean, great as he is, that might not be the way to start, you know, with children, you know, giving them, you know, Spengler or Nietzsche or whoever. I mean, so, you know, this is a great way to get people into it where they can, you know, have these talking points, have this challenge to the mainstream narrative, the anti-white narrative that these kids are facing every day, and gives them hope and gives them comfort. That's really what I want. And I want to make this into a series where we have part two, part three, whatever, indefinitely, and maybe a graphic novel one day. Donald Kent is up for it. I mean, we're not quite there yet, but hopefully we can consider like this to be a real franchise, so to speak. I would love to continue this as much as possible, and hopefully the reaction so far has been very positive, so hopefully we'll be able to accomplish that.
Well, I really am excited about the idea of pro-white advocates and content producers moving into the arts, and that includes works of fiction, novels, theater,
right?
You name it. We need to have a presence there as well, and done at an exceedingly high level, which is what you've done here with this book. Now, I want to go back to some more topics about that are contained in the book. Anytime you talk about slavery, now that is the one thing that whites are supposed to be remembered for, is that there was a time in the history of the world where we were engaged in the practice of slavery. Well, of course, everybody was. We're the only ones that
right.
are held to
yeah,
account
was,
for it. But it still exists. Yeah, it still exists in certain parts of the world. We were the ones who ended it at a great cost to ourselves. Anytime
exactly.
you mention, though, the topic, you got to mention Michael Hoffman's book, They Were White and They Were Slaves, The Untold History of the
yep.
Enslavement of Whites in Early America. This is a topic, again, as I said before, I'll say it again, a potent arrow in the quiver of the anti-white arsenal. The history of white servitude, though, Spencer, and its suppression as a historical topic, why was that something? You could have had any topic that would have made sense for this particular novel, but that's the one you chose.
Right. Well, you know, it is central. The idea of slavery is central to the anti-white narrative. And the interesting thing is that the teacher is so complacent that she just said, do your projects on slavery. She didn't specify what kind of slavery. She just said slavery, assuming black, right? And so the kids find a loophole and they say, well, you didn't say what kind of slavery. And so they push this in, you know, bring in white indentured servitude and saying this was slavery. And, you know, that's what causes the big, you know, the big conflict in the end of the story. And so, yeah, why did I pick it? It's because it is central, and it is central to the narrative, and it is something that kids will be taught ad nauseum in their history classes in high school. And so therefore that was like the, and also I had been studying it, independently. I reviewed Michael Hoffman's book that you just mentioned for Countercurrents. And, so I was already versed in the subject, and I, you know, then I decided, okay, well, I'll study some more. And I did.
How in this universe that you created for the purposes of this book, how is that an allegory for our own world?
Right. Well, the town that the kids live in doesn't have a name. And we don't really say where it is, but you can figure out it might be Pennsylvania, it might be Ohio, it might be Kentucky, West Virginia, maybe. And it's basically the high school itself is a slowly, I should say rapidly diversifying place. So the kids who are now juniors in high school were, you know, when they were, it was all white when they were in second grade. And now, you know, there's blacks, there's Hispanics, there's Asians, there's all sorts of people. And that might not be entirely realistic because things were pretty darn diverse, you know, 10 years ago or 12 years ago. But I mean, I'm using this as an allegory. So these kids remember a time when this was an all white school, and now it's not. And they're having to deal with that. So in that way, it's an allegory for America becoming more and more diverse. And also, I point out that the four main characters are what we call townies. So these are people who, these are kids whose families can stretch their roots in their hometown back over a century, into the 19th century at least. And it's stated at one point that whites were now a minority in the school, and townies were a minority among the whites. Because now there are all sorts of whites coming in, not just, so therefore the townies are sort of a much smaller, you know, percentage of the school than they used to be. So that just sounds familiar to many legacy Americans.
Spencer, what is the takeaway after somebody reads this book? What is the lesson and the message that you want them to have learned and want them to be considering?
Right. Well, I mean, you know, I try to stay away from didactic messaging in my work because, when you just get on a soapbox and preach, it gets boring. But this is a kid's novel. It's a young adult novel. So there's a didactic element to it. And basically, like I said before, it's like there's an anti-white narrative out there. They're trying to crush you. They're trying to break your spirit. They're trying to demoralize you. Don't let them do that. And don't let them think that they have one over on you because they have college, because college is something they can withhold if you don't behave. Don't buy into that. If there are other options in life besides actually going to college and doing things the way you're supposed to do. You stand up for yourself and just be true to yourself and be true to your history and to basically appreciate who you are. So I mean that if someone is going to have a takeaway, that's pretty much it. There might be more, but that's the big one.
How can people get it? How can people learn more? We mentioned whitepeoplepress.com, but that's not the only place. It's available on Amazon, is it not?
Right. Yeah, it's available on Amazon at the moment. And as of now, that's the only places where it's available, as far as I know, is the White People Press and Amazon.
Right, the whitepeoplepress.com and Amazon. You search the No College Club. You search Spencer Quinn, Q-U-I-N-N, and there you will find it at a very reasonable price. And I'll tell you, we've got a lot of listeners at different in different phases of life, different stages of life,
right,
all the way from the retiree and the empty nester to somebody who's just beginning to feather their nest, and maybe
right,
some people listening tonight, undoubtedly, with kids that are entering into their high school years. This is a book you can give them that isn't going to be preachy. It's something that they might enjoy, something that they can relate to more than the books that deal with, you know, hard, cold topics and issues that we so often talk about. This is something that would reach them on their level. That's why I think it's important. So, folks, if you are in that age and in that stage of life, you've got kids in high school, junior high, college even, get this book. I think your kids will enjoy it, and it's the No College Club. Spencer, thanks so much for being on with us tonight and letting us know about it.
Yes, thank you very much. And it's Spencer J. Quinn, just so you know.
Spencer J. Quinn. Yeah, I see it on the book. There's no doubt about it. Hey, folks,
okay,
support his work and buy his book, and we will talk to him again, I'm sure. Want to thank also Mark Weber. Want to thank Patrick Martin. We'll be back next week with the annual Valentine's Day Ladies Night installment, March Around the World, not too far away, as we begin to kick 2023 on TPC into high gear. Well, we came out of the gates in high gear. We're not slowing down. Good night, everybody. Talk to you next week.